the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, now featuring a new thumbnail. Len, you came up with the idea for a new thumb. You valiantly put one together. My wife messaged me. She was not happy about it, and she made one for us. I hope it meets all the needs that you wanted for the thumb. It looks good. People are giving me some kudos on it in my DMs. Do you like it? And if you do, what's your favorite thing about the new thumbnails?
Are you asking me or the audience?
You.
If you're asking me, it's much more simplified. And that's essentially what we're trying to achieve here. Much more simplified approach. It was too busy the last time. And it's just an evolution, Joey. I think we've learned a little bit more about YouTube and how it works. I've done a lot of research. We'll see how this pans out in the end. It's going to take some time before we get some results here.
It's true. We have actions that are available to us. Our tools to deal with our YouTube subscribers only increasing very slowly, much the same way as Jerome and his tools next door. We're not going to find out if they work until a couple of months have passed. So anyway, Len, it's good to see you. Happy to be here for number 68, one away from the nice episode. I don't know. We don't really have any plan for that 69th rip yet. It's next week. Should we start talking about that? Do you want to?
I haven't even thought about that, so we'll have to do this definitely offline. Let's not start throwing ideas right now. That's a big episode. That's correct. We'll see what we could do and make this one a really special event. But yeah,
I got nothing going on over here for housekeeping. You want to do a little housekeeping? You got anything you want to say? We'll go into the price. What do you want to do?
Well, let's do the sponsors first. That's number one.
Of course, ShakePay, best place for Canadians to buy and sell. That you should never sell your Bitcoin. Len, they got so much going on. They got the Shake squads they just added. So every time you buy or someone on your squad buys, you get 42 sats just given to you. They just hand it over. Okay. It's outstanding. Paid out every day. Then they got the shaking sats. If you use our promo code to sign up, Charlie Beta Peter CBP. I wonder where we got that, eh? You can shake your phone every day. On day 365, if you manage to do it 365 days in a row, you get 1,000 Satoshis every day that you shake. It's incredible. Okay. You can't beat this. Then they got the Sats Back card where you spend off your CAD balance and you're just given 2% back on your first 5,000, 1% after that. And still, Len, Shake Paid. They're still giving shit away over there. I just got Shake Paid like last week for like $4, like I was saying at the beginning of the Jeff Booth interview. So you might get your whole purchase comped. I don't know what you're doing if you're not using the card. I use it all the time now because when I don't, my friends get upset that I'm not contributing to the squad. So, you know, give ShakePay a look if you haven't done that already.
Agreed. And our next sponsor is Ledin. And it ties very well into with ShakePay because you buy some Bitcoin and you could put it on Ledin and earn some interest on the Ledin platform and open up an account with our referral code below. Dump 150,000 Satoshis or 75 USDC and keep it on their platform for 15 consecutive calendar days, and you'll be gifted 10 USDC. Not only that, if you need any money and you don't want to sell your stash of Bitcoin, well, you're good to go because Ledin is there to help you out. They could give you a 50% loan to value. And if you think the price of Bitcoin is going up, and it just took a little bit of a dump before we started the show, so it has to go up, right? So you could use the B2X option and double up your Bitcoin stack. Once the price gets high enough, you don't be like Elon, you pull out, you're good to go. And the last thing they do have is the Bitcoin-backed mortgages, industry first, not available in every jurisdiction. Check their website for where the Bitcoin-backed mortgages are being offered and for the interest and loan rates because these change on a month-to-month basis. So that's it for the sponsor side. I do have a few other things I got to rip up here. Number one, we got a very nice review on the Apple Podcast front. So anybody that writes a review, I'm happy to read it. And this one you'll like, Joey. It reads, love the show is the title. And the content is excellent podcast. I've been watching for months now and find this podcast very informative. Len and Joey are very real and I could relate to them. Also helps if they speak in layman's terms, making the show quite easy to digest. Signed, Dab's mom. So thank you, Dab's mom, for signing.
Mrs. Dab.
Also, this Saturday, we're going to be at the Safari Bar and Grill. That's at 1749 Avenue Road. That's North York Avenue Road, just south of the 401. Greg Foss will be there. Tomer Strolite's going to be there. We're going to be there as well. This is sponsored by ShakePay. There's going to be free booze and free food. And CoinKite will be there raffling off an Mark IV cold card. And Luxor is going to be there to raffle off a S9, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
So it's going to be lots going on there. 2 to 5, I believe, the time.
That is the time. You got it.
Awesome. So, yeah. So check that out. We'll be there doing a live show. Another thing I just wanted to make note here. We've been getting a fair bit of sats that have been donated to us by the Podcasting 2.0 front. I want to thank everybody for that. And I just want to encourage everybody to use the Podcasting 2.0 apps such as Breeze or Fountain in particular, where you could earn sats just by simply listening to podcasts. And we're going to make a donation by all the sats we've been receiving in the past 7 days and the next 7 days as well. It's going to be donated to something called Me Premier Bitcoin. That is the Twitter handle, My First Bitcoin _. What they are, they're a NGO focused on free Bitcoin education in El Salvador. And the way things are going on in the world in terms of a lot of troubles, interest rates going up, harder to make ends meet, we'll just simply donate the Satoshis that's being donated to us, and hopefully it will make some lives better out there. So that's all I have to say before we move on to the price of Bitcoin. Anything else you want to talk about, Joey?
Not right now. Just looking forward to that event on Saturday, 2 to 5. We are going to do, like you mentioned, something there. I don't know exactly what yet, Len. We're going to bring at least 2 mics, maybe a third hot mic, and we'll do something for maybe an hour or something like that, or half an hour. We want to enjoy the event. We know people don't want to listen to us, you know, talk for an hour. So we're going to try and keep it, you know, relatively short, have a beer or two, and talk to everyone the same way we always try and do. So yeah, looking forward to that. Cannot wait. I'm ready for the price, buddy.
Let's do it.
To your point, a little bit of a dive here. 19,900 square is what I see, US.
Mm-hmm. And 25,827 in Canadian dollars. What did you do, boys and girls? What did you do? Let's drive this price up. Or it's actually a good time to buy. That's another thing. B2X. It's a good time to B2X. Let's move on. Let's talk about some very important news. And we talk about this on a weekly basis. And there's more economic woes that are in front of us. And we're essentially a short time away from getting official word that the U.S. is in a recession. And for when the news comes out, anybody who's in shock that the recession is here, well, they should be looking to gain yield on an algorithmic stablecoin, because they probably have their heads buried up their ass. You cannot be surprised that we're in a recession. And we're talking about inflation. People are wondering what's causing it. And we're getting still incredibly some debate as to the root of this all, including some prominent blue checkmark professors on Twitter. And one in particular was saying that he believes that it's the result of greedy giant corporations taking excess profits by jacking up prices. Those damn corporations, Joy. I knew it was them all along.
The corporations, on my dartboard. Are they in the room with us right now?
I don't want to say, but they are the culprit. I know them. They're the culprit of this all. But then again, these people, they fail to understand the massive profits they're experiencing right now, this year-over-year jump. It's a result of the economy coming back to life after forcibly being shut down. And plus, the overall market, it's changed. It's not the same as before. We have more liquidity out there. It means there's more money in the markets that you could use to buy stuff. And it's vastly changed over time, because also the base unit, the U.S. dollar, has changed, because it's becoming less and less scarce because more and more has been printed. But let's get into the numbers of this all, because, you know, as much as I talk about it, I could probably paint a better picture with these numbers than I could simply draw it here. We're living on borrowed time and cheap credit. It's fueled our way for our life so far. And the U.S. total debt changed from, get this, $22 trillion to $30 trillion in 3 short years. And that's a 35% increase over that time span. And the average rate of interest paid on a debt has increased from about 1.56%, that was back in January, to 1.73%, where it stands now. And it's getting more costly to service the debt as the rates go higher and higher. And although this is a less than 0.2% increase on the interest paid on a debt, and it may not seem like a lot, but we're dealing with a massive number of $30 trillion. So this makes an absolutely massive difference. And if you look at the 12-month sum of interest that the U.S. government is required to pay on the debt that they currently have, $654 billion. This is just money just to service the debt that it makes them to not default. Imagine all the services that could be bought with this $654 billion, all those buy back better things that could have been purchased. Maybe they could give money to Ukraine. You know, that's something that everybody seems to be loving these days. But it's, you know, as things get worse and as the rates continue to climb, there's going to be more and more debt that's going to be piled on. And it's a matter of time before we get it. It's going to be $1 trillion and it needs to be serviced on an annual basis. And to give you a comparison, that $1 trillion, the total revenue by the U.S. in a given year is around $4 trillion. So we're getting close to a point for every $4 that come in through taxes and through user fees, only $3 are going to be kept, and one of those dollars is going to be used to service the debt. That's incredible if you think about it. And obviously, the Treasury Department hasn't been stellar with savings. And with that, let's move on to the U.S. residents and their savings. And this is actually a good indicator on where things are going with the economy. In December 2021, Americans had excess savings totaling $2.7 trillion. This is according to Moody's analysis. And that was the peak, $2.7 trillion. Since then, it's been drawn down by $114 billion. And there's a report that shows, quote, poor Americans, end quote, have just 6 months before their savings run out. What will happen when the savings run dry? Defaults, skipping meals, increasing crime, all the above? But really, your guess is as good as mine. But one thing is for certain, it's going to be an awful Christmas for many, many people. And there's charts out there that's been published that JP Morgan credit default swaps breaching levels not seen since late stage great financial crisis. And again, this is more shades of 2008. And we discussed last week about people living paycheck to paycheck. And one stat I don't think we talked about was that 70% of millennials are living paycheck to paycheck. Do we talk about this particular stat, Joey? I don't recall.
We didn't talk about millennials specifically, but I think we did talk about how paycheck to paycheck isn't the destitution you may think it is. It's, you know, you're living paycheck to paycheck on that survey if you invest most of the cash and leave yourself with almost nothing in, you know, in like pure liquid terms from check to check. So still bad, but not maybe, you know, to your point earlier, like, are we going to get riots? You know, so that 70%, not all of them are going to riot, but right, some of them might not buy equities, right? All that stuff matters. Anyway, I don't want to cut you off. Keep going.
But in terms of a population of the millennials in the United States, I did some digging here. The amount of millennials equate to 22% of the total population. That's a little bit over 72 million people. And that's about two times the population of Canada and what they're claiming to be as a quote, living paycheck to paycheck, end quote. So really, are we one catastrophic event away from experiencing financial ruin for these people? I guess it's the proof will be in the pudding once it happens. And for those who also want to execute on their dreams and buy a home and own a home, this is going to have to wait a little bit longer because the sting of buying is really going to hurt. The average new home price, the new home prices are 10 times higher than the per capita disposable income. And in case you're wondering, this is the highest ever recorded on record. But also some more recent reports. We also have home sales are getting canceled at the highest rate since the start of the pandemic. Roughly 60,000 home purchase agreements fell through in June. That equals to 14.9% of homes that went under contract that month. So it is more and more people just walking away from buying homes. And there's even in Austin, Texas, they're saying there's a real problem over there. A lot of liquidations that are taking place, inventories racking up. And it's just, it's absolutely incredible what's happening. Again, more shades of 2008 bullshit. But we can also talk about income, and a good measure is, let's talk about disposable income in particular as a way of checking. We could check that actually the health of malls for this to give us some shine a light into this. And the stats are showing there's a steady decline of sales in malls over the last several months. And okay, I can understand some people might be pointing, oh, the weather is better, maybe less people wanting to go to malls. But these are numbers that are comparison to the same time last year. So there is a very good comparison here. And digging deeper shows outlet malls in particular are showing negative growth for May and June. And all this downwards spiraling started in February. That was a turning point where things went from decent to where we are right now. And we could also turn to Canada and we could look at car sales, and there's an estimated 144,000 new light vehicles were sold for the month of June. This is the lowest since June of 2009. Which was a troubling year for selling cars.
And was it a troubling year? Why was that? I didn't realize that was a troubling year. Something happened
great,
there?
Great recession, yeah. Whatever. And a lot of this, I could pinpoint it on supply chain. Like, okay, rising interest rates, yes. Wages not keeping up with inflation, yes. But maybe even some of it could be an uncertain economic future and people are just not willing to take the risk of buying new cars. And also Canadian manufacturing, its activity growth, it's now at the slowest pace in 17 months when you're looking at the month of June. And that's not looking good moving forward. And they're saying this is all due to material delays, higher cost, and reduced workflow of new work. And if this really does look bad, but it's not all that bad because according to this guy, he says, Canada, the economy is in really good shape. This is according to some guy named Pedro Antunes. He's the chief economist at the Conference Board of Canada. I can tell you this, Joey. This is Glenn, one page
chief economist. Chief economist. Like, come on, again with the chief economist thing.
It's
like,
always some
all
chief.
Wrong all the time.
Well, are you going to vote for this Pedro? Because I'm definitely not going to vote for him, thinking that everything is all good with the economy. But enough about North America. Let's move out to the rest of the world. And inflation in the Eurozone, it's now being reported at 8.6% as a whole, and this is the highest ever reported. And interestingly enough, that the European Central Bank, their main policy interest right now stands at 0.5%, negative 0.5%, sorry. So it's below. So the ECB, they're going to be thinking about raising rates or talking about it by 25 basis points in July. And there's going to be further increases later on. But really, this is kind of very, very late in the game. Why are we waiting so long to raise rates? But also the euro is virtually on par as of today with the US dollar. And this is the first time this ever happened. But it's not all doom and gloom in Europe. There's at least some members in the eurozone that are enjoying the perks that come along with adopting an ESG agenda. And for example, we have in Germany, the largest landlord has warned tenants that once things start to cool down this fall, they could only turn up the heat to a toasty 17 Celsius or around 63 Fahrenheit between the hours of 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. So it's really going to be fantastic this winter for the people in Germany. And the people eventually just had to have enough. You talked about rebelling. We have this right now. Protests are sparking throughout the world. Sri Lanka, the economy has collapsed. People have had enough. And that ESG experiment has gone awry. People stormed a presidential palace, took it over. Also, the central bank, the president resigned, presumably fled the country. And questions remain, what's next? Farmers in Netherlands, they had enough. They took to the streets. Same in Italy. Farmers got pissed off. And now they're storming towards Rome. You have citizens in Ecuador pissed off against rising prices, unrest in Albania, Turkey, massive inflation year over year, bank runs in China. This is incredible. And the report that the banking system is a large part of the GDP. So if they run out of cash, and this could be a real problem with the Chinese economy, but not just there, there's also Lebanon, Egypt, Kenya, Laos, Pakistan, Macedonia, Bulgaria, Argentina, Ghana, Panama, Sudan, all having civil unrest. And it's a matter of time before this hits the shores of North America. Remember, we had baby formula shortages not too long ago, and it had to be flown in from abroad. When was the last time we ever experienced anything like that? It was a food shortage in the United States that they had to beg somebody else to bring in a fucking plane.
The U.S., the White House was putting those pictures up of like, it was like celebratory, congratulatory photo montages of the military.
Like it was a win.
Formula. Like, this is fucked.
That was an L. That was not a W.
A big L, yeah.
The food is going to be a real problem because the second harvest with those ESG-related countries, they're not going to have a very strong or if a second harvest at all. So there's going to be some food shortages. We also have mysterious fires being lit up in these power of food plants throughout the United States. Plus Russia and Ukraine, they're not going to be exporting food this year. Typically they do. It's going to be an absolute mess. But interestingly enough, the fuel prices have starting to come down. But this is a shell game because governments are either subsidizing fuel or reducing taxes. All in all, I'm going to give it to you, Joey. I just want to say one last thing. This is the end, just close to the very, very end of this fiat experiment. And we're all going to suffer as a result.
It does feel close, doesn't it? I mean, you and I obviously think it's closer than most of the population. But can we agree that this feels like we're really getting close to a watershed moment? I think we probably both feel like that, don't we? So I'm not going to say a ton about this. I got to be honest. I had a really busy weekend, so I got like sparse notes here. I'm glad you went long. And I got some commentary here that I think you'll find interesting and some tweets that I want to share as well. So I think that in your notes, you had a tweet from MSNBC that linked to an article on their website, or CNBC. And the article basically said that there's not much that rising rates will do to help the economy at the moment. To me, in a world where, you know, I think most of the media is barely arm's length from whatever the party of the left is in America, Canada, Europe, to me that signals a significant shift in narrative, that they know the rates cannot continue to go up regardless of what CPI looks like. So I would expect that this is going to become more apparent as time goes on. We talked before about how, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, a friend of the show, Massa, interpreted the bond data for us and said that the rate cuts, not rate freezes, not anything else, cuts are starting to be priced in Q1 2023. That's less than 6 months away. Okay. So you got that. I think the Federal Reserve lend, like to that sort of in the same vein, probably realizes they oversteered. The lag between those interest rate hikes as a policy decision and the effects is too long. You're never going to be able to know what exactly you've done until you know you've oversteered, and then you're going to oversteer the other way. We talked about this like visual of a car careening side to side on the road, just smashing the guardrail over and over again, right? So that's another problem. I think they've at the very least sort of realized they've realized they have a shortcoming there. Worse, I think that this situation sort of in the global economy is more fluid than others. You talk a little bit about energy, literally goes from $110 a barrel to $95 a barrel in two trading days between basically Thursday, Friday, and today. And that's, you know, I think my view on that, NFA, obviously, is that it's still going to get to 130 before the end of the year, unless that war ends. And even if it does end, I still think there's a chance it gets to 130. And then on top of that, you have the housing thing too. In Canada, we're not quite as high in relation to the lows in interest rates as the U.S. is. But if you're a U.S. citizen with a variable rate, you're paying 100% more in interest than you were at the beginning of the hiking cycle. The rates there have more than doubled. The Fed funds rate has more than doubled. So you're paying quite a bit. You mentioned a couple of things about auto sales down, I think, what'd you say, 12%, 11%, something like that?
14, I think, was the number, but it's down significantly. It's not
really high, right? And here's a hypothetical for you I saw on Twitter to tie in another one of our favorite subjects here, this sort of ESG renewables thing. What is the sustainability longevity outcome for all these Tesla and other EV vehicles that can't be afforded and end up sitting in parking lots, in dealer lots for a year or 2 years? What does that do to the battery? What does it do to the longevity of the car? What does it do for all the stuff that we were told that these things are supposed to help in the broader picture? I doubt very much it's a good thing. I would also posit to you that the same is true for homes. As people can't afford homes, they become, you know, when a house is not lived in, you get problems. You get problems with whether or not that place becomes more, whether or not that place becomes livable or comes off the market entirely. It hasn't been lived in for a year. There's problems with it. No one knows what's going on in the pipes, for example, or whatever, right? These things all are all problems we've not had to deal with before, at least not in any kind of sort of substantial way or, you know, I guess pick your phrase there. You get what I'm trying to say. I think the other thing that you and I talked about last week that is related to this week as well, high income earners feeling worse about the economic outlook than low-income earners is disastrous. Because we talked about, and I think I tweeted this on Saturday, this intentional obfuscation by modern-day Democratic governments and their media stenographers, this intentional obfuscation between median and mean. They want you to think that most households are in good shape. What they really mean, though, is that the average household is in shape based on the Pareto principle. 80% of that good shape comes from 20% of, you know, high income to middle high income earners. And so if those people feel like the economy is going to be worse in the short to medium term, they're going to tighten their belt. And if they tighten their belt, that's a lot of spending that doesn't get pumped back into the economy. It's a lot of equities that don't get bought. It's a lot of houses that don't get purchased. It's a lot of things, right? It's lower family starts. It's all that stuff. That's important. And there's repercussions for that that are going to be felt a lot sooner than the Fed can raise or lower rates. Eurozone, you mentioned, continues to be an area to watch. I have here in my notes that the euro was just above parity. It's parity now. First time in 22 years or 21 years. That's a disaster. You mentioned the Italian protests. China now as well, seeing depositors unable to withdraw their funds from one of the major Chinese banks. This stuff seems far away. And you mentioned that, you know, although it does seem far away, it's possible here as well, of course. But like, Len, I'll just remind people that Canada and the big four banks, I mean, all our banks, there's no reserve requirement here. So what do you think would happen if we all went to the bank and tried to get cash?
It's gonzo. We're not going to, if we all do it on the same time.
It's Ponzi-nomics, man. The whole thing is, running on fumes under the assumption that you will not try and get your money out at the same time everyone else does. And to someone's point in the chat, the reason you don't see this stuff on the news is because if they stir the pot, you know, the water is starting to boil over here. And in, I think, a lot of the modern world, places we would consider historically consider to be very steady in their politics and their economies and in their sort of societal mores, let's call it. I don't think this is, you know, I don't think this is as steady as a lot of people think it is. The German energy thing is laughable. Over there, you talked a little bit about the Eurozone inflation, that 8.6. Germany now saying that natural gas and nuclear are green, right? All of a sudden they've declared these things to be like, is this not the funniest thing? If you're one of these people who is still stupid enough to think that ESG declarations and these sort of virtue signaling for investments is anything but a grift, like you can't be helped, man. You cannot be helped at this point. A couple of things I want to mention here, a few tweets that I got bookmarked. One of them was brought up by Take the Ride already, so he sort of spoiled me here. 3 hours ago, White House spokesperson Corinne Jean-Pierre, I expect new CPI data to be highly elevated. That's good. I'm sure we're really looking forward to that.
When was the last time you heard that White House press secretary come out and say something like that?
Saki said it too. And it was
did she really?
Like maybe 3 months ago. And it was a blowout. It was another blowout read. Now, here's the interesting part. A guy who I want to have on the show. Yeah, a guy I want to have on the show at some point, TXMC, is looking at this Cleveland Fed nowcast for inflation that we talked about last week. Do you remember that? They are predicting right now that the print for this month will be 8.6% in the States. Do you know how many times they've underestimated the actual CPI print?
Every time.
In the last little while.
12 out of 12 times.
Every time. Every single time.
What did it come in last month? Was it 8.6 as well? Or are they saying
they're going to get a 9-handle? It's going to be a 9-handle CPI print, and people are going to lose their minds. They're going to lose their minds. And so, this to me is like, it's funny, kind of. I almost didn't want to use the word because we saw this coming 2 years ago, right? March 2020, April 2020, May 2020, the Powell meme, the printing, the inflation content online, the YouTube channels, the mean replies, all this stuff, the Jack Dorsey tweet, all this stuff, right? About hyperinflation. And what were we told? Oh, you guys are crazy. You Bitcoiners, you're out of your mind. Well, here we are now. We're going to get a 9-handle coming up. Are you kidding me? When was the last time? Like, and again, to your point about the fuel prices, for example, you're going to get a bit of a break in fuel probably on next month's print instead of this month's print. But, you know, what's that break going to give you? If the CPI comes down to like 8.6 or 8.5%, right, with the break in fuel costs, what is it going to come in if the fuel costs get to $120 a barrel, if the war continues to drag on, if Germany keeps shuttering nuclear facilities, if the U.S. refuses to expand its refining capacity? It's just going to keep going up and up and up and up. It's ridiculous. People think this is going to land somewhere under 10 if we keep going this way. I'll just add one other thing here, okay? A tweet from Zero Hedge that I'm going to share my screen here on U.S. dollar strength index, the Dixie. You'll remember, or maybe you won't remember, but there's, you know, frequently nowadays these reminiscences of 2018, September, November, October 2018. Where something happened in the DXY, or something happened, I should say, in the repo market that caused the financial system to break. There's a lot of people who think that breaking hasn't really been resolved yet. So you see here, it was at BBDXY. So it was at just shy of 1300 up here back this is a little before 2020. Okay, so now you're getting close to that same number again, right?
I don't see it, by the way.
You don't see it. What do you mean? Really? No. Oh, fuck. Yeah. I always forget to add it to the stream. Okay, so
there it is.
you can see there, right? BBDXY, just before March 2020. You can see how high that thing spiked. Now, that was during COVID, right? So there was a real issue here that was causing global panic. What is the issue on the right tail of that curve now? What is it? What do you think it is? Honestly, Len, I think it's just that this thing is about to break and there's just nothing anyone can do about it. There's too many systems, too much leverage, too much debt, too much everything. And it's beyond me.
It's hard for me to digest and give you, I don't know. I have no clue. So maybe you're right.
We got to get someone on to talk about that. Someone who's got experience with that stuff. So I'll leave it there. I don't know if you want to add anything else, but I think all the stuff you're talking about, it's never been more tumultuous out there for investors, for people who are trying to start families, retired people. Like it's unfortunate. It's sad. It's almost like a tragedy that people who retired 5 years ago, who probably already had to work longer than they wanted to, now are basically unable to train themselves for the new economy and cannot find work, even though they will probably have to go back to the workforce at some level to maintain their quote unquote retirement status. It's unbelievable. We've completely failed these people. And there's going to be, man, I hope there's consequences for politicians and economists, chief economists of whatever fucking bank and board and panel and think tank and NGO. But if you had to guess whether or not there'd be consequences, where would you guess? I know which way I'd lean. No. It drives me nuts. Yeah, it drives me nuts. It sucks.
Hell no. Well, you go to Venezuela, that's more of an extreme example of what's going on there. And the politicians, they're the ones that brought them to where they are right now with the financial ruin. They're not getting the axe. They're not getting torched. They still live their lives. They have a very nice presidential palace with swimming pool and they have food on their plates while the population doesn't have that. And if you look at, again, I'm still going to use Venezuela as the example. If you look at the population, the old people that were retired, like you mentioned, they're back into the workforce and they have to now try to make ends meet because their savings has been eroded due to excessive money printing. And it's a sad situation and it's going to happen here as well as more elderly people that thought they had enough to live off their golden years. It's not going to be the case and they're going to have to find other ways to make ends meet. Maybe if they're lucky, they own a home and they could do a reverse mortgage, but I don't know.
Imagine though, that's what you have to do to sustain. It's just ridiculous, man. And again, you and I have talked about this before on the show, how the CPI print is way undervaluing the actual cost of living increases that most people face. And the reason that I think that print even exists is because it's the only way to keep pensions and other indexed fixed income solvent. If we actually knew what the inflation rate was, if they actually used the cost of housing and the cost of energy at the proper weighting and rate of change, I mean, the thing would already be underwater. Public service pensions would be underwater. CPP would be underwater. Teachers' pensions underwater. Like, you just can't afford to pay all these guys till they're 90 at the real rate of inflation. And so you're never going to get good info because all these bodies work together to paint a funhouse mirror photo for you and we talked about the causes of, the things that causes, family issues, relationship issues, burnout, all kinds of stuff, right? It's just, it's all bad. And there's no repercussions. There's no self-reflection by any of these people, any of them. And it's really the average person who doesn't have the means and tools to deal with this stuff that pays the highest price. It's fucking insane, man. Should make everyone mad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as for the price of gas, and I think right now in the States, it's around $4.60 something per gallon. It's dropped from the slightly over $5 per gallon. I just want to make everybody aware that they're putting more ethanol into the blend. And it's 15%, I think, is the number that they're doing for the summer months. And ethanol is highly subsidized by the government of United States. So once they get off the summer blend and move to the winter blend, I don't think they could use ethanol as much in the winter than it can in the summer. We're going to get a more actual real-time price of what it is for the price of gasoline at the pumps, because right now it's a shell game. They're just yeah, it is what it is, and it's pretty shitty right now, but whatever.
Scam on scam. Oh, they're everywhere, and they're expanding and accelerating, and they're just piling on top of each other. Those scams are going to deleverage to at some point, the same way that DeFi is, which is the next topic. So let's fucking
hop in. Just one thing. Everybody loves your headband. Lots of comments of the headband.
Usually it's on the chair. So today I put it back on.
Yes.
For you guys. Yeah. I get a lot of comments about that thing.
Let's talk about another story we talk about, and it seems we talk about it very frequently these days, but it may be one of the last times, is the centralized exchange drama that's been unwinding in front of us for the last few weeks. Months, is it? It's been a while.
Got to be a month or so now.
It's pretty nuts, but a lot of drama here. But it looks like we're finally coming to the end of this all. And one thing is clear, like I'm happy that we are coming to an end, and once it finally clears up, I'm going to fucking degen everything I have. Like Wojak, put it into the next DeFi project that's going to give 20% APY. I'm going to look forward to that, and you're going to report back on my progress once it happens. I'll be the next Wojak. And last week, you talked about the exchange Vault. I think I'm pronouncing it correctly.
So
they're in trouble. Well, there's rumors swirling now that Nexo may be out there to snag up the whole Vault operation, and there's more consolidation that's taking place in this field. And we can't go by a week without talking about Celsius, but we also have a Canadian connection with the doomed exchange. A gentleman by the name of Rod Bolger. He's a former RBC Chief Financial Officer.
Look at that. Another one. Unreal, man.
I'm just pulling them up left and right today's episode. And Mr. Bolger is now working with Celsius to steer them through the financial troubles that they have. And he will help usher them along for restructuring or a sale of the company. And what I find to be very interesting is there's reports that Celsius has paid off all their Bitcoin loans, and the liquidation price is effectively $0. And this is fantastic news for Bitcoin, because there will be one less excessive pressure downward that's going to drive down the price of Bitcoin. So one less variable that we could remove from this whole equation. But something that really wasn't considered in the equations was a lawsuit that was filed in the state of New York. And this is by the company named KeyFi, I think is the name. And they're suing Celsius. It's still relatively new. I haven't really gone through the whole document, but there's going to be a lot of drama for this one. So stay tuned, because this is going to lead to a lot of funny stuff moving forward. And in terms of Celsius's wealth, and people are asking, how is it going to be redistributed moving forward? And investors from the Aave protocol, Compound Finance, and MakerDAO, they're going to get their share. They're top of the list. The users, you can't have a proper rug pull without the users getting the shaft. And moving on, we could talk about Three Arrows Capital. And this is the company whose downfall spearheaded all this liquidations and threatened to topple a whole bunch of these exchanges. Apparently, they even have ties to Genesis. Genesis has confirmed that Three Arrows Capital was a counterparty for loans. Very interesting stuff here. Three Arrows Capital reportedly rug pulled a $250 million loan with blockchain.com. So they're fucking screwing everybody over. And we can move on to Voyager. And I talked about it today in the mining episode, and that Voyager filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And they have also voluntarily delisted their stock from the TSX. Talk about a fucking disaster over there. And if you look into some sporting events, it's really funny, because you could find Voyager advertisements still there on some sporting events. It's funny that it's still being prominently displayed, those advertisements. And that's fucking pretty damn funny. They just filed for Chapter 11. But what isn't funny is they're still drawing money from customers that have reoccurring buys. So customers of Voyager that had reoccurring buys, they are still reporting that Voyager is taking their money. And this is happening after the bankruptcy filing took place, and also after where all trades ceased. So they're just taking money, and there's no way to stop that. That's fucking pathetic, if you ask me. And what's going to happen through this bankruptcy? Well, Voyager is sending out signals that customers may not recover everything that they had on the Voyager exchange. Remember, customers are number one, except when it comes to bankruptcy, and then they're the fucking end of the line. And if you sift through all the bankruptcy documents, it shows that Alameda Research, this is the company that's tied to SBF, well, they owe Voyager $376 million. It's funny that a company that SBF owns Voyager quite a bit of money. And they're not the only ones in debt with Voyager. We talked about Three Arrows Capital. This is very prominent. $654 million is owed to Voyager, but also lesser known. Genesis owes Voyager $17 million. Galaxy Digital owes Voyager $34 million. And there's lots of speculation why Alameda Research owes money to Voyager, but nothing has been proven at this time, and everything is just up for grabs, and nothing is concretely proven at this point. And as for SBF, he's also mentioned that he's sitting on more than $2 billion of cash, which he could redeploy to buy up some of these exchanges for pennies on a dollar. Or he could even focus on some distressed Bitcoin mining companies. There's a lot of options available for him with all this capital. And the last, we can't really go any further without talking about the pumped exchange BlockFi. And their investors are going to get wrecked because FTX got the sweetheart deal. And it's going to be not very much money that's going to be flowing to BlockFi. Maybe they could make a contract and get an autographed picture of SBF to try to ease the sting here. But as a way, you could tell what's going on. There's the whole saga. It looks like it's coming to an end. Even prominent people like Lynn Alden is saying that there may not be some very many massive liquidations moving forward, which is really good, because then Bitcoin could find a floor or 20,000 right now. And if we could find a floor and build upon it, we could then get the price moving on up. Less of these massive liquidations. This might be one of the last times we talk about these stories at length. So what are your thoughts, Joey? And it may be one of the last times you get to really rail on these companies.
I don't have a lot to say. I'll note that, okay, let's start with this, the floor, the price floor for Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it goes to 15 or 10. I don't care if the recession announcement that's almost certainly coming in 2 weeks drives this thing down another 5-10%. It doesn't matter to me. 20% doesn't matter to me. I also don't think that the lack of liquidations will stop the FUD train that continues to come from TradFi, from politicians, and you know, really, it's a wide net they're casting now, and it's catching a lot more civilians than it was 2 years ago. I think that comes with lower prices and comes with these mass liquidity events and scams and Ponzi's and things of this nature. And there was a tweet that came out a little while ago, just before the show, from Crypto Whale. 3AC offices are empty and the founders are MIA. Mm-hmm. So those guys fled the country.
Singapore.
What were the two guys' names? I forget now. Kyle.
Zhu was one of the last names.
Zuzu is one. And the other guy, I can't remember. Doesn't matter anyway. These people are scammers. They've been known scammers. Great video that Tone Vase dug up of him, McCormick, Alex Mashinsky, and
Saifedean
Amos. Yeah, friend of the show, Saifedean, by the way, for those listening. And Saifedean and Tone are going, what the fuck are you talking about? The whole world's going to make 7% on everything they put in. And Tone is like, you hear what you're saying? Everyone can't make 7%. Like, it doesn't make sense. And Mashinsky's like, oh yeah, for sure, they can. And like, these people roped in major players. We talked about the Quebec pension fund, for example, that was in on one of these things. Was it BlockFi? I forget now. What they were like?
Yes.
These guys are in the capital round of these shitcoin casino yield programs, and you know they're talking about, oh well, it's really the average investor that's being hurt. We need regulation. It's fucking pension funds, man, that are getting roped into this stuff. Cities, you know, Miami's was in on this DeFi thing. I'm sure somehow they're involved. So you got that going. I'll just mention your buddy Rod there, Rod Bulger, suspiciously close to Rod Blagojevich, don't you think?
Is that a basketball player? Or
he's a defamed politician who committed some financial fraud in America. You may remember. Went to prison for a short time.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I don't know that.
Very, very, very similar name. Anyway, it's great that this guy went from steering like multiple Canadian banks, presumably into the curb, to steering Celsius into a curb. Is this not incredible? Like, they truly the best and brightest, right? Incredible stuff from our friends at CBC, from RBC, and then from Celsius now too. One last thing here. on the biggest victim. Oh, just threw my wedding ring at the desk. Biggest victim of FUD that the space has seen, I think, in the last 5 years is Tether, right? Tether yeah. has been taking a lot of grief from a lot of parties, both internal and external, in crypto, in Bitcoin, and outside of our space, in the TradFi space and other investing niches around the world. These guys had $7 billion in claims in 48 hours when all this other stuff started to go tits up, okay? They met every single penny of the claims that came in against them. Every single penny. Do you think any government or bank in the world could do that?
No, they it was on Saifedean.
He was on Saifedean talking about that. That's
yeah.
Right. No chance.
They hold a lot of bonds, though, and treasury
so
bills.
So what?
I'm just wondering.
I honestly don't care if they hold seashells. If they can make $7 billion in claims in 48 hours, that's better than any bank or government can do. Period. Full stop. I don't want to hear any more about how Tether's not backed enough, it's not liquid enough, it's not whatever enough, okay? Your money, investor X, naysayer X, Bitcoiner, crypto guy, who doesn't like Tether, doesn't think they're backed, your money is almost guaranteed to be in a place that is less liquid and less able to meet demand requirements than Tether is. That's a fact now, after that $7 billion. There's nothing else to discuss on this front. I don't want to hear it anymore.
Oh, I was going to talk about it.
We can talk about Tether. I'm just saying on the liquidity / solvency / you know, can they meet their claims front? It's over now. Okay, no more from Prof Plum, Mike Green. No more from Doomberg. No more from Cope the Raven, QTR. I don't want to fucking hear it. It's over now. Okay. I guess I'll just say this, Len, and then I'll pass back to you. I think we're done with liquidations. I think that's got to be it. The bodies seem to have all washed up. I'm good with where we are. Are you good with where we are? What do you think?
I have to be good with where we are because there's nothing I could do to change what has happened to this point. And yeah, I think a lot of people are saying it, and I'm in agreement with them. We're done with this liquidation stuff. We're not going to have any mass liquidations moving forward. We had such a drawdown in the price. Miners even selling a lot of their Bitcoin too. So there's a lot of liquidity added to the market. And it's a little bit under 20,000, a little bit over 20,000 where we stand. Seems to be bullish, I think. That's my opinion. But
same.
Tether, I just want to go back. Until there's a proper audit done, I'm always going to have a seed of doubt that's just in my mind. It's, you know, that's the one thing.
You're not going to be the only one. But I just think, like, these people who think that Tether is going to be the catalyst for $0 Bitcoin, like, that's done now. This is the opinion of the fool.
Uh-oh, we lost Joey. Okay, I'll have to do this show by myself.
I'm right here. What do you mean? You can't hear me?
No, you froze. I want to know if it was you or I that froze.
Oh, you freeze sometimes too.
Okay.
We still rip it though.
So anyways, Boomer was saying that Rod the Bod guy was on Big Brother as well. I'm not sure.
Blagojevich. Yeah, he was. He was a few years ago. That's right. I forgot about that. Good point.
Pretty cool. Yeah. So
I'm surprised you of all people don't know who Rod Blagojevich is right off the top of your head.
Yeah. Oh, look, Rogers. Everybody's talking about it freezing. But who is it, people? Is it me or is it Joey?
I got Rogers at home, so maybe it is them.
I don't. I have something else. So anyways, let's move on. Let's talk about the Canadian news because I got a few stories there that I want to bring up. And the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives, the CCPA, love these acronyms, they have come to the conclusion that the Bank of Canada's rapid rate hike will likely cause a recession, according to a study. I can't believe a study was required in order to come to this conclusion. And the study showed that the last 60 years of the central bank, in the last 60 years, the central bank has only three cases where they managed a 5.7% reduction in the inflation rate by quickly raising interest rates. And each case was followed by a recession. And they're saying, if they are going to do this, significantly raise rates and continually do it to really drive down the price or the inflation rate, there's going to be significant collateral damage. And they're saying there will be job losses around of $850,000 jobs in Canada, which is significant considering that the population size that we have here. But this is not out of the norm. Like they came to this study and we all are in agreement with it that rapidly raising rates, it's definitely going to cause a recession. But Yeah, it's just, it's cementing the fact that we are screwed if they go down this path. But as you mentioned, the smart money is looking like that they're going to be cutting rates, at least in the United States, Q1 of 2023. Let's see if Canada follows suit. They may or may not, but if they do, then they'll do an about face and QE, let's do it. Let's do some more QE.
We're going to cut in 2023 for sure. That's a guarantee. This is in the same vein as what I said to your first story, that now you're seeing these sort of arm's length institutions, foundations, schools, media outlets, all saying the same thing, right? Rates hiking is not going to stop the recession, one, or is not going to stop the inflation, one, and two, it's going to cause problems. So we better start thinking about another way. This to me indicates they have already decided the fate of the rates in Canada. They're going down. What are we talking about? They're going down. Of course they are. Like a Cessna 1-2 engine plane over the Pacific. The thing is fucking going down, man. It's no way, no doubt about it.
Doesn't have the range. I like a Bitcoin all caps. He's saying, who could have seen this coming? Nobody could have knocked me over with a feather. I don't know. Anyways, let's keep things moving along. And the Bank of Canada interest rates increases are causing confusion and stress for many Canadians. This is according to a 2022 real estate study completed by TD. And you talked about this last week or the week before, Joey, and I'm going to give you a lot more context for that story. It found that 38% of Canadians are confused about what is rising interest, while
70% don't even know.
It's insane. 76% of Canadians who want to buy a home within the next year are worried about the impact the increases will have on home affordability. That makes sense. The study says 31% of Canadians surprisingly believe that interest rates don't impact them on their mortgage, highlighting knowledge gaps around both what it means for them as well as the impact it could have on the housing budgets. 31%, almost one in three, have absolutely no clue that interest rates drastically impact the price of homes moving forward. This is a large voting block. That's the reality is. And if they can galvanize each other and just use that 31%, that's enough to vote in anybody they want. Just about for a minority government, maybe a slight majority. It's a lot of people that just have no clue. $1,000 for everybody. Let's make it all happen. That should be the way to just to make things a lot easier for people. That's what the leader of the third party is talking about these days. So
yeah. I know your boy Jugmeet there from NDP-CCP talking about giving everyone $1,000. I'll just note that this, Len, what are we doing here in this country? Like, we don't know what rising rates are going to do to your mortgage payment. We don't know. Who are these people that don't know? Are these people voting? Hope not. Are they driving next to me on highways, like at high speeds? Probably. Am I asking these people for a spot at the gym? You know, like, are they just going to let the bar fall on my larynx, like crush my throat? We can't have these people around, Len. There's got to be a better way than to have a bunch of people wandering around the streets completely clueless. Are we kidding with this?
No, they're too busy watching stuff like TikTok and they, enjoying their Netflix. That's
TikTok. TikTok has investing in advice, doesn't it? Like, it's got to be. It might not be good advice, but I guarantee even the TikTok investing crowd knows what higher interest rates are going to do to something that you pay based on how high the rate of interest is on the principal. Like, this can't be something that this country has become, can it?
It has.
It's complete failure. It's complete failure.
And I would love to see moving forward.
Teachers unions are constantly bandying on about how important their job is and how good a job they're doing. They're failing.
This is, oh, we lost Joey again. I'll just add some context here. He's right. They are failing the people because they haven't been giving people enough information to connect the dots.
Failing. Teachers.
Oh, no, Joey. Your connection is just, it's going.
I never stopped hearing you. So just keep going.
All right, let's transition to the next story. And we have something from the Royal Bank of Canada, which says that Canada is heading towards a moderate recession, but the economic contraction is expected to be short-lived compared to previous recessions. This is due to economists from the RBC, which they're predicting. And remember that they were talking about high inflation was supposed to be transitory. So really, I'm not going to have too much faith in this being short-lived. because it looks like for the next little while, at least, they're going to try to aggressively raise rates. And somebody was asking if they're going to raise, Alexander was asking if they're going to raise it's 75 basis points or 50 basis points this month. Everybody's talking about it's going to be 75 basis points, but really it's a crapshoot at this point. But yeah, the RBC is saying it's going to be a short-lived and moderate recession. I don't buy that. I think it's going to be deep and it's going to hurt a lot of people very bad.
What has RBC been right about so far that I can point to as a, you know, indication that they're right about this? Anything? A single thing, anything at all?
I can't say what they've been right on, and I also can't say what they've been wrong on, because I don't follow them too closely to remember what their analysis were for the past while. So I'm going to take a pass in this.
I guess so. I don't trust them as far as I can throw them, man. I don't trust them as much as I trust my internet, and I don't trust my internet much at all.
So Canada reported in May a near record 5.1% unemployment figure, and that was just recently released. And CBC released an article that says Canada's job market is setting records. So why are people talking about a recession? And they're saying despite big positive numbers, the economic narrative in Canada right now is dominated by doom and gloom. The problem is unemployment is just one metric. It's an important one, but it's still just one solitary metric, and it doesn't capture rising cost of carrying debt, bankruptcies, and a whole lot more. But so there is some good that we could see from this. There's, you know, unemployment is rather low, but it's not the be all and tell all. There's so many other metrics we could use to see what's going on. So CBC, I see you're trying to shine a good light on this, but it's not working with us here at the CBP. You guys are just a bunch of no-coiners. And I have a no-coiner that's going to be very good to talk about later in the show.
I have nothing to add to this. I think this is another example of stenographers for the state running with nonsense narratives that everyone with a brain knows are just completely wrong, misleading, intentionally so in the worst case. It's another example. It sucks, man. It sucks.
So I'm not sure if you're aware, I totally forgot about this, but the 2026 FIFA World Cup is going to be coming to North America, and Canada is going to have some games in Toronto and Vancouver, from what I understand. Well, apparently there's going to be some added costs that haven't been initially costed out because of inflation. They have to now increase the amount they're going to be spending to make everything up to par. And now the estimated cost is going to cost around $300 million in total. And it's going to be equating to about $60 million spent per match that's going to be played in Canada. It's an increase of around $10 million per match. And this is as a result of recent escalation in inflation rates. So there you go. So they're going to be increasing the amount of money they're going to be pouring into this. Remember, we had the Pan Am Games not too long ago in Hamilton and Toronto. I'm not a fan of bringing this stuff in here because I don't know if we could generate enough income, enough money to offset what we're going to be spending. Plus, you have the added the delays that you're going to have roads that are going to be closed and people are going to have to spend more time in the roads. So there's a lot of other things you have to deal with. I'm not a big fan of these things. Olympics is another one. When they do this, it's like they're adding to their legacy, but in reality, they're just adding to the debt. And this is something they costed out and they couldn't have planned out the inflation where it is today. And they have to add more money, and it's more money they could spend on anything else, but they're spending it on this World Cup event. I'm not sure if you want to add any more to this, but I'm pretty pissed, to be honest.
I'm with you. This happens in the third world more than it happens anywhere else. World Cup, Olympics, all this stuff. These guys build stadiums. They try and drag people in. It doesn't make the money they thought it would. They don't have a use for the stadium after. And it's the same story over and over again. Where is Toronto going to have World Cup games? The Rogers Centre?
BMO Field sucks.
It sucks. It's a shitty venue. Where's Vancouver going to have it? The Whitecaps Stadium, whatever the soccer team there is. Those aren't World Cup quality stadiums. Period.
They're going to be increasing the seating capacity of BMO Field.
To what?
It's going to have to. There's a minimum requirement, so they have to add 15,000 extra seats just to meet the minimum. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
It's all bad. It's so much.
It really is.
Engineering costs. You know what? Like you can't shoehorn in 15. You're gonna double the capacity of that arena on a
I think it's a 50% increase, if somewhere around there. But regardless of the fact, it's just a constant. When it was first built, it was much more cozy, and now from where it is today, like it's much bigger. And yeah, I see where you're getting at. I'm just not a big fan of this. The only saving grace, I could say, the location is somewhat decent. There's no subway service there. It's a bit of a walk from the subway. There is a GO train stop there, but who's going to be using GO? Predominantly, I think they'll be using subway and maybe cars. But yeah. It's so corrupt. FIFA is so corrupt. If Qatar, or I think I pronounced it correctly, Qatar got the World Cup, and that was, and even Brazil got it too, not too long ago, and it was all corruption based. A lot of money was exchanged, from what I understand. These are just allegations, nothing proven. That they were able to get the events approved. Because how can you have a World Cup event in Qatar? In fact, they have to not have it in the month of June and July when it typically take place. It's now going to take place in November because it's just too freaking hot to play soccer. Does not make sense. And then that's going to interrupt the domestic leagues. Is the European leagues all play through September through March? And so this is going to cause a real problem. But that's a different argument altogether. But yeah, we should just move on. There's so much more to talk about than just soccer. Leiden, they're going to have their proof of reserves coming out. They did their latest attestation of it, and that was done on June 30th, 2022. And this is going to be coming out sometime before the end of July. So if you are a Leiden client and you're looking for the proof of reserves information, this month it should be coming out. So keep your eyes and ears open for that. And good for Leiden for doing this. They're transparent.
It's crazy that these other companies, BlockFi specifically, is not offering this service immediately, as quickly as they can, to try and ease the pressure on themselves and bring some transparency to the platform. Bitcoin all caps in the chat. Our favorite Leiden bear, sir, every week. Attestations are not audits. You are correct about that. We should bring Mario on as a not in his capacity as the Leiden community guy, but rather as in his capacity as a Bitcoiner, and talk to him about this, among other things. I think he's been in the mix on a lot of interesting debates on Twitter recently. About mining fee emissions and stuff like that, recirculating old coins, et cetera, et cetera. I think it might be time to bring him on. I know we just had him, but seems to me there's a lot of stuff going on that he could help us decipher, decode, and pass along to the masses.
Rogers, everybody is aware, had a big outage in Canada that affected around 1 in 4 people, from what I understand. That's quite a number of people that have Rogers services. Well, what didn't have any interruption was Bitcoin. And in fact, I don't think there's been an interruption in the Bitcoin network since March 2013. So that's quite a long, lengthy time before they had the last outage. Banks did suffer some problems. In fact, the Royal Bank of Canada, I'm not picking on them, but this is the only one that I know for sure. They had a outage because of what happened with Rogers. And They were also talking about other financial institutions having problems to a varying degree, but Royal Bank of Canada, for whatever reason, really was hit hard. And it just goes to show you that legacy system is really tied to the services we offer here. Now, granted, if you don't have internet, you're not going to be able to use Bitcoin, but you are able to somehow, if you are able to somehow get on a network, you're okay. These banks, they are tied to something like Rogers. And if Rogers disappears for a period of time, you have no ability to get your money, pay your bills, and so forth. So yeah, it just goes to show you that there's some real problems, and we're so tied to the to technology these days. And if it goes down, we're absolutely screwed. But yeah, Bitcoin seems to always stay up, which is rather good. So yeah, that's all I got to say in this topic.
That Rogers outage was really something. I think the service is still a little flaky here, as you guys are finding out. It was a little flaky for a few friends of mine up until yesterday, as far as I could tell. And it's a single point of failure. What is the excuse from a business practice perspective, if you're a government, to allow that much centralization of important services with one company, including 911, by the way? Mm-hmm. You couldn't call 911 a few places during that Rogers thing. So like, what is the rationale there? There can't be one. It's time to decentralize these things. Time to take away these monopoly powers and let the free market reign. Our government has been very anti free market on the cellular bands for a long time. And I think, I hope people think about this and start pushing for change on that front.
Well, it's not entirely true. I remember there was a, I forget what Spectrum was sold off about 5, 6, maybe 7 years ago, and they purposely didn't sell it to Rogers, Telus, or Bell, and they held it for the remaining players, and Wind was the one that picked it up at the time. Now they're Freedom Mobile. So yeah, they tried at least to try to prop up some of these smaller players. But if you recall, maybe 10, 15 years ago, a major player in the States was trying to make a foothold in That's Canada. Right. I forget the name of who
18 was.
And there was so much lobbying going on by the Bells, the Rogers, and Telluses. And
Robellus, would, man, they're that's a, a fearsome triad there, those three.
Yeah. It's not good. Well, they kept AT&T at bay, and they didn't get into the Canadian market. But yeah, so that's it for the Canadian side. I got a few rest of the news stories I want to talk about. And number one, looks like we talked about Compass Mining turfing a couple of their C-suite executives last week. Well, they're going on and they're going to be turfing about 15% of their staff, which is really interesting what's going on over there. I'm not sure what's going to happen with Compass Mining moving forward, but maybe SBF may be able to pick them up on the cheap. But not only that, there's also another company called Advanced Mining Group. And I'm throwing this out here because this is another hosting Bitcoin mining company, so very similar to Compass. Apparently, they stopped paying out their miners. So when you're dealing with companies like this that do hosting for their clients, if it's like it was said in a previous week, I think a Bitcoin all caps said it, if it's not hashing in your garage, it's not your ASIC. And this is another case. You have two companies out here, one being Compass Mining, and this is prominent. Everybody's aware of it. But the other being Advanced Mining Group. This kind of hit me by the, you know, was not on my radar, but they're giving their customers a hard time. So really sad stuff going on here on the hosted mining front.
Big time. Though sad is not surprising, is it? You know, we like we talked about before, we had WIT on January, maybe December or January, because there was starting to, you know, be evident cracks in the armor over there as far as delivery, as far as storage, as far as power procurement, all that stuff. And he danced around it, I think, with us, but obviously those chickens came home to roost. Now, here's the question for you. That kid, that poor kid they've been sending to the wolves in the spaces, Compass, are they going to lay him off, you think? That would really be a kick in the pants, don't you think?
I can't say. What do you think? Do you think they will lay him off? Or he's
for sure.
15% is...
Who's consuming Compass content at the moment that they need that kid around to jump into spaces and say that he can't answer questions?
Like, it's low on a priority for me. If I see Compass on there, if I'll go on it and hear... If they're talking about the litigation,
you might have gone on last week or the week before, but in 2 weeks, are you still going to be hopping in there? No,
probably not. If they're talking about litigation, yeah, because that's something that, but they won't be talking about it, unfortunately.
Yeah,
because that's a topic that interests me. I want to hear what's going on between them and Dynamic 3D or something. I forget the name of the company, whatever it is. But anyways, let's move on. And there was an announcement from the U.S. Office of Government Ethics, and they said that government employees who hold cryptocurrencies are disqualified from working on any crypto-related policy or regulation that could impact the value of their holdings. And they say for employees that hold as little as $100 in crypto will be banned for working on some of these regulations and policies. That's good. I'm good with that. But does the same apply to equities? Heck no. And we could use the shining light as of Nancy Pelosi. And there's so much talked about her investments and how well she's been doing. They're focusing on one thing, but they're not talking about another. They're focusing on quote unquote cryptocurrencies. But in terms of equities, they just turn a blind eye to that. That's fucking pathetic. And this is the reality of the world we live in. They're trying to pad their pocketbook, and they'll do everything they can to ensure it continually gets padded. And yeah, fuck over the little guys as much as possible.
Buddy, you see Nancy Double D Pelosi? She's
on the
kicking
beach?
Ass, taking names. Yeah. Well, wait a minute. Double D, due diligence. That's how she does so well in her stock portfolio. What do you mean the beach? What are you talking about?
No, she was on the beach the other day. Did you not see? She was like parading on there.
I'm not commenting on any photo of Nancy Pelosi at the beach, sir. I refuse on this program. Now, let me ask you a question about interests in the items that are being, you know, that are having policy made about them. Does this apply? This might get us in some trouble. I'm going to say it anyway. does this apply to women or Aboriginals who are working on policy that benefits women or Aboriginals?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not going to comment on that whatsoever.
Of course you're not, because it's fucking taboo. But we're talking about the same principle here, are we not?
Perhaps, but again, I'm not going to touch this with a 10-foot pole.
Something to think about is all I'm saying.
Very well. And let's transition to Russia. And Russia, they're going dark from the international monetary system. And as per a Chinese state media resort or source, Russia is no longer going to publish its gold or foreign exchange reserve holdings. So up until now, they have to report on how much they held in fiat currency and in their reserves, etc. But now this information is going to be kind of a state secret. Really cool stuff that they're doing this. They're really giving the finger to the rest of the world. And I can't blame them given what has transpired. A lot of it is their own doing, but then again, you know, this is just the way things operate. You know, you hate me, I hate you, and I'm going to do something that's going to be against what you're doing. But yeah, they're going dark in the international monetary system. I'm not sure how this is going to play out moving forward or how it's going to impact things, but I think this is rather interesting that it was reported.
I think so too. I've seen a lot of whispers about BRICS coming up with their own monetary commodity channels, in a way that's going to influence heavily the Western powers, Europe and whatnot. We're going to see, Len, this is all stuff that's happening really, really fast. There's what's that old saying, right? Sometimes a decade happens in a week. You're seeing those weeks happen in the last month or two. And I think they're going to continue to happen as long as that war is going on, honestly.
And the last story I have is about Mt. Gox, and their creditors are getting closer and closer to receiving the Bitcoin that they lost. Right now, a trustee has the Bitcoin held, so it's not lost. It's not an exchange. It's essentially, and the trustee has it somewhere. And that's 142,000 Bitcoin that could potentially be dumped on the market once this is all said and done. Apparently, a survey was done for the users that were impacted, and only a small number were actually considering selling their lot. A lot of them are still considering keeping the Bitcoin, given how much the price of Bitcoin has risen since the hack has taken place. I think they're thinking that there's going to be still a run-up in the price of Bitcoin. So the 142,000 potentially could be dumped on the market, but from according to surveys, only a portion of that may happen. And this will only be released in tranches. I don't think it's a whole 142,000 is going to be released in total. It's going to be done in tranches. So even if everybody wanted to dump it, it won't be dumped all at once. So that's something else to consider about this thing. But it just seems to be some closure to this whole Mt. Gox story. So yeah, that's really sad stuff for people that lost something. But yeah, good that they're going to get it back in the end. At least some people are.
Interesting stuff here. When are we going to see the new multi-sig custody model, the Mt. Gox, where there's a bunch of keys, you hold none of them, and you're never allowed to see your Bitcoin or sell it? It's worked out well for a lot of these people. We might have to work on that.
we could patent this. I think the CVP, this could be our very first patent. We talked to Mr. Wright, Dr. Wright. He patented a lot of things and see how things are done. So anyways, let's move on. There's no more stories I have, but I do have a no coiner, but no Bitcoiner of the week. Do you have any of the two?
I got nothing, but I'll tell you who the no coiner of the week is sponsored by. Get the hat. Yours is closer than mine. Tahini's Restaurants, many locations in Southern Ontario, the best wraps, the best shawarmas, the best bowls. At Tahini's, it doesn't matter what the price is. It's always a bowl market.
I love it. So yeah, as I mentioned, unfortunately, I do not have a Bitcoiner of the week. So my no coiner is a gentleman by the name of George Kent, maybe a Dr. George Kent, but George Kent nonetheless.
What's he chief economist or something?
He's a professor. A professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of Hawaii. And he wrote an article back in 2008. I know it's a long time ago, but still, nonetheless, this was published very recently by the United Nations, and it was soon taken down after there was a lot of backlash.
They did take it down.
They couldn't keep it up. So the article, in fact, you can't find it. You have to use the archives, the web archives, in order to find this information. And it's titled "The Benefits of World Hunger." And I find it to be quite ironic that George Kent, because he wrote this article, because he claims to be a international relations, peace, development, environmental issues, human rights, special focus on nutrition and children. And so he's a human rights dude and all this. Like, I can't believe he would talk about the benefits of world hunger. And the UN, I'm going to talk about them just a little bit. They stand on three pillars: human rights, peace and security, and development. And none of these three are being met with what they're talking about in this article. And I'm going to quote two paragraphs in this article. This will just give you an idea what, why Mr. Kent is a no-coiner. And the first paragraph is, much of the hunger literature talks about how it is important to assure that people are well-fed so that they can be more productive. This is nonsense. No one works harder than hungry people. Yes, people who are well-nourished have greater capacity for productive physical activity, but well-nourished people are far less willing to do that work. And he also says, for those of us at the high end of the social ladder, ending hunger globally would be a disaster. If there were no hunger in the world, who would plow the fields? Who would harvest our vegetables? Who would work in our rendering plants? Who would clean our toilets? We would have to produce our own food, clean our own toilets. No wonder people at the high end are not rushing to solve the hunger problem. For many of us, hunger is not the problem, but an asset. Incredible stuff that the United Nations, they too are a no-coiner for simply publishing this, but Dr. Kent is a massive no-coiner to even come up with the idea that using hunger is a tool to try to keep people working hard because he doesn't want to clean his fucking toilet. And he even said, quoting, for those of us in the high end of the social ladder, clearly he thinks he's much better than most of the people in this world. A true no-coiner and a true piece of garbage for writing this. And he is my no-coiner of the week. Nobody can dispute it. Maybe a Hall of Famer no-coiner after this piece was written.
That is unbelievable. We might have to add that guy to the shirt. That's like really top-notch stuff. It's the embodiment of all the stuff we talk about on this show all the time, right? It's like the – yeah, I know, Kim Jong Kent in the chat. You're right, Yellow. It's just ridiculous. We need more hungry people so that they work and keep me fed and clean my shit off the porcelain, basically. This is the guy. Ask yourself, okay? Gelman here. If the UN is willing to publish that and you can spot the problem with it, how many things are they publishing that you can't spot the problem with? Mm-hmm. Many, many more. Many, many more.
I would go to say that I saw his picture. He seems like an elderly person, somebody I would assume in his 60s or older. So he must have, I'm thinking he has grandchildren. And as a way to ensure that they work very hard, he should ensure that they are withheld food and constantly stay hungry. This would be one way that they could meet the demands of the parents and grandparents and society as a whole. So yeah, that's what I would suggest that he do with his loving grandchildren, should he have them. Take away a meal or two. Do this for a period of time. Keep them hungry. Make them very productive. You know, if you're going to do it, don't just talk the talk, walk the walk. You're truly in my no corner of the week.
Send them out with those UNICEF boxes looking for donations at Halloween. Really, very on brand. Bitcoin all caps makes a good point here. Something I should have remembered. I heard this on Marty and Matt's show. Bitcoiner of the year, Peter, I think his last name is Weil or Wheel. Bitcoin core developer recently stepped back from being one of the six core GitHub maintainers. So the man has done quite a bit of work. He's widely regarded as a very strong member of the Bitcoin community. Marty and Matt did a good thing on him. Matt knows a little bit more about this stuff than I do, so maybe I'll defer to them and that program if you guys want to hear more. But very few people who know as much about Bitcoin as some of these early devs. We got to keep these guys happy and make sure that we're carrying the torch for them as well. So yeah, great idea, Peter, Bitcoiner of the year.
Good one.
Although we'll still have to have another Bitcoiner next week. We can't just cop out the rest of the weeks with that one guy.
Do you remember a little while back, Craig Wright was suing a lot of these developers and then they basically quit and then went by a pseudonym.
Yeah.
And yeah, so and so some of people were actually donated Bitcoin as a thank you for, and not like a Bitcoin, but partial Bitcoin for a thank you of the work that they're doing for the community. So I just, yeah, there's some really good work that's being done, and it's unappreciated and unpaid.
Yeah. So. Critically unpaid. I should say most critically it's unpaid. So yeah, the support is huge, man. We need those guys and girls to continue their work. Len, that's it. Should we get the price of Bitcoin here and then head to some discussion with the friends in the chat? 19,930. So a touch higher than we were when we started, but nothing really notable.
So 25,951 in Canadian dollars. Whatever. We're going to have to eventually go up. It's been whatever. eight month drawdown. It's been a long time, eh? Like
It's been a long time here. We've been grinding. We got recession on the horizon. We got economic downturn all over the world, unrest accelerating. So let's see what happens to the price, man. I don't know. I'm buying. You buying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm How buying. Could you not? It's cheap enough.
That's it. That's all.
I was buying at 60. I'm buying a 20. Right? Like, what the hell?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Anyway.
You know, I'll just have to say one thing, though. It's still more expensive than when I first got into it.
Is it really?
Remember when I first, like, this is still higher than when I first bought in back in 2017. So,
yeah, I agree with you there. Absolutely. Okay. Well, if you're on audio, come over to YouTube, watch the last 10 or 15 minutes. And if you're here already, hang out. We'll be talking about Saturday, talking about some other shit too. And until we see you next, I guess we should say maybe Wednesday, we have Frank Holmes, CEO of Hive, coming on the program at 5:30 for a stream. So hopefully you guys will tune in for that. That should be a good interview. Send your questions in the same way you did for Jeff, which I really appreciated. That made the interview a lot easier. Anyway, yeah, we'll talk to you guys soon. Take care of yourselves.
Take care.